just died in your arms tonight.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, I don't know why I'm drumming, using Duchess Satine as bait, Darth Maul lures Obi-Wan into a trap. There will be Papa Palpatine comes calling, an awesome fight after another awesome fight, and Satine and Obi-Wan say their final goodbyes. We're talking about The Lawless this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great.
I have another song for this.
I know, I saw it on there. You don't have to say it now because they've already heard it.
I'm just dying in your arms tonight. Must have been something I said. I just died in your arms tonight. The other song I was going to suggest was from Moulin Rouge because the main guy, Christian, is played by Ewan McGregor, and the person that he is in love with is a woman named Satine. But they didn't have a specific song, even though it's a musical, they didn't have a specific song when Satine died. So I was like, aw, sad face. We'll go with I'm
Dying
in Your Arms Tonight.
That's a shame because I hate that movie.
What?
That's a shame, but I hate that movie, so.
I love that movie. Oh, what do you hate about it?
Did not like, what didn't I hate about it, to be honest with you? Oh. That could be a whole lot. Well, maybe we can do let's not do a commentary someday.
No, I would be singing the entire time because I love that movie. Oh my God.
Yeah, but, I was not a fan.
But yeah, I was just like, there's one or two, I actually rewatched Satine's death scene today just to see if there was a song, and I was like, nope, Dying in Your Arms Tonight it is. Well, you ready to get into The Lawless? We're recording two tonight, guys, so we got all of our tangenting out of the way.
Yeah, so I don't know what we could tangent about, quote-unquote, this week.
I finished reading the Thrawn novel, and I found Heir to the Empire, so I started that. And I must say, it's not grabbing me as fast as the Canon Thrawn novel did, because, like, I was just eating the shit out of that from, like, page one. I was like, yes!
I couldn't get through Heir to the Empire.
But so far, I'm in chapter two, and Luke, like, it feels very fanfiction-y, and that's
yes.
The thing. And I hate, because, like, the first chapter was cool, because it introduced Thrawn, it introduced Rook, it had Captain Paleon, it laid down everything about Thrawn. It was great. And then chapter two, Luke is having a dream and old Ben Kenobi shows up and he's like, hey, Luke, just BT-dubs, I'm dead. Bye. I'm never talking to you again. And Luke's like, oh, I'm so sad that Ben is gone. And I'm like,
Yeah, I know that feeling.
I want to try and at least slug through it because I brought all three of the Thrawn trilogies. Actually, what I really, really, really want to read is Outbound Flight. That's because it's like a prequel sequel. It's like Thrawn before he went into exile, and it has his brother in it, Thrass. And Thrass is a main character in my fan fiction, so I actually really want to read more about Thrass. So I kind of wish I bought Outbound Flight first instead of going from the Thrawn novel. But I think like what I like so much about the Canon Thrawn novel is
I heard he had a half brother who was Mon Calamari named Prawn.
I hate you. But like I think what I liked so much about the Thrawn novel that's in the canon, the one that just came out, was how much it just tied into Clone Wars and Rebels because it's right in between that spot. And I said it last week that like a third of the book is from Governor Price's point of view and her rise of power, so it's just really cool how it ties in. But it's just like little things like Thrawn and Eli is his like space John Watson. If Thrawn is Sherlock, Eli is his space John Watson. Well, there's like, for example, there's a battle where they go to Umbara and Eli's like, I don't know why Umbara is fighting back because they got their asses handed to them during the Clone Wars. And I'm like, yeah, they did. I know exactly what that means. Fuck yeah, Umbara. So I think that was like half of the fun of reading the canon Thrawn novel, because they just have all these nods to both Clone Wars and Rebels. So it really connects well in that canon, which is why, like, as I'm starting to read the Heir to the Empire, it's just I'm having trouble connecting with it, because it's just I have to disconnect myself from
right.
the canon.
It's a different timeline universe sort of thing.
Yeah, and I just have to completely disconnect myself from the canon, and so it's a little bit harder to get into. But I will say, Jeezy Creezy, I'm so excited for the second Thrawn book coming out in July, because it's Vader and Thrawn, and they're going on like a road trip together, because Palpatine's like, I sense a disturbance in the forest. You two go on a road trip together, and they're both like, what? What the fuck, Palpatine?
God, it's going to be planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah, so I'm just like super excited about that, because they released the first chapter, and it was
That's not a space pillow between us?
I can't wait for it, because it's just going to be the mysticism of Vader versus the scientist of Thrawn. And
the
it's
space
just...
space odd couple.
Yeah, and it's going to be so good. I can't wait for it. Especially because, like, it takes place after season 3. So in the opening chapter, Palpatine was like, so Thrawn, what was the Bindu? And Thrawn's like, I don't even fucking know, man. I don't even know. And that's what I like about it. It's just so tied into the canon. I love it. So... okay, there's our tangent. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so there's our tangent for the day. The lawless... my voice just turned into a 13-year-old boy. The Lawless is the 104th episode of Star Wars.
You know, we had Patrick Delmore as a guest co-host today.
Lawless
is 104th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars.
In February. That's Valentine's Day. Oh, I have to ask a girl out.
I wish I had a Valentine.
In 2013. Patrick, we love you. We're poking fun. We really love you a lot. And it aired on February 2nd, 2013. It was written by Chris Collins and directed by Brian Callan O'Connell. Some extra information for you, and we're going to start this off sad. The episode was dedicated to Ian Abercrombie, the voice of Palpatine and Darth Sidious, who passed away a year prior to its air date. The episode also featured some of the last of his recordings of Palpatine. The episode also marked Darth Sidious' first appearance in the flesh, written in the context of the Clone Wars, having previously only appeared in a hologram. However, Sidious' final lines in this episode were actually recorded by Tim Curry, who took over his role as voice actor. Ian Abercrombie passed away January 26, 2012. This episode marks the first appearance of Darth Sidious in the flesh, and all the other... Darth Sidious fights with two lightsabers. It is evidence that in Episode 3, he has two lightsabers in Revenge of the Sith, though he never had an opportunity to wield them simultaneously, since he loses one in his fight against Mace Windu before dueling Yoda. Obi-Wan is wearing his Rocko Hardeen disguise from the Season 4 Deception arc when he first arrives on Mandalore. The much battered ship, the Twilight, now sports a cartoonish illustration, which this just makes me laugh, because this is Anakin's personal ship, and of course Anakin would do some bullshit stuff like this. The Twilight now sports a cartoonish illustration of Anakin as a boy pod racer pilot, with Arabesque text that says, Wizard! The Twilight has not been seen since Season 2, Children of the Force. Anakin fucking painted a picture of himself on his goddamn ship, because of course he did. As Savage dies, he transforms into his original pre-monstrous form as Mother Talzin's dark magic drain from his body. And finally... the next part of Darth Maul's story picks up in a canon comic, Son of Dathomir. During the development of the show, Son of Dathomir was planned as a 4-episode story arc by the show's writers to tell Maul's adventures following this episode. The episodes would have been titled The Enemy of My Enemy, A Tale of Two Apprentices, Proxy War, and Showdown on Dathomir. However, the show was canceled before any of these episodes could be completed. It is the only Dark Horse Star Wars comic that is currently canon. We will cover post-Clone Wars canon material after we finish the show, so we'll talk about Son of Dathomir then.
I might have to track that down and get copies of that.
I only have one. I've been, every time it's in our store, because they re-released the trade paperback under the Marvel title, so now it's under the Marvel title, so they have a new trade paperback of it. And every time it's in our store, I'm like, I'm going to buy that, and then I sell it, and I'm just like, fuck. So one day, when we actually get it back in, I'm just going to put it to the side and be like, you will be mine.
I might have to head over to eBay.
Greedy is in it. Greedy is in it. Greedy!
Six arms to hold you.
Do you really want to be held by Grievous?
Cuddle. He's cuddly.
Oh my god, I just imagine Yoda crawling inside of his chest cavity and wearing him like a suit of armor.
Warm in here.
Meanwhile, Grievous is like, please get out of my lungs. I have a brain, a face, and a lung. Please get out of it.
Smoker you were.
Are you a smoker after sex, Yoda?
Not cigarettes.
A good cigar.
No, just smoke.
Yeah, are you blowing smoke out of your ass? Is that what you're saying?
Space friction.
Oh, you blow, do you like blow, like, you queef and smoke comes out of it?
Call it what you will.
Alright, what's the platitude this week?
Ahem. Morality separates heroes from villains. In bed.
True that.
Makes more sense this week, huh?
Yeah, last week's was terrible.
Within the story and within the bed.
I thought you said wetting the bed. No, we're not wetting any beds, so.
No.
All right.
If we were, we'd be certainly telling y'all about it, though.
Probably, don't you? All right, so Act 1?
Act 1.
Some shit went down last week. So after Death Watch and the Super Mario Bros. Teamed up to overthrow Duchess Satine of Mandalore, Preet Vizsla and Maul dueled to the death. Maul found out that Beheadings is a lovely town and killed Vizsla, becoming the ruler of Mandalore, and took over Death Watch. But Bo-Katan was one of Vizsla's followers, refused to let Maul lead, and took half of the Mandos with her. On to this week! Satine is in prison, but a guard opens her jail cell. The guard is killed, and wow! It's the little shaver from two seasons ago where there was corruption everywhere. Corky. Corky is Satine's nephew. And I wrote just to refresh everyone. See, this is why I shouldn't vamp, because I actually wrote the notes already. Just to refresh everyone's memory, he's Satine's nephew. There you go.
And really, with a name like Corky, how couldn't you be a nephew?
Yeah.
That's a nephew name.
Yeah. Suddenly, Bo-Katan shows up and shoots the other guard. She removes her helmet, and Bo-Katan and Satine clearly know each other. And they haven't seen each other in a very long time. And the enemy of Bo's enemy is her friend. And Satine says that it's perhaps time they become friends again. And it's time for them to kick ass and take back Mandalore. Mostly Bo-Katan, because Satine's a pacifist. Corky's friends from the Academy episode are all grown up and helping with their escape. They need to contact the Jedi, but they must get out of the city to do it, because they don't have any phone service. They all hop in a speeder and drive like Batman out of hell. But Maul's Death Watch, who's sporting new painted armor and looks really awesome, spots them and attacks. Bo-Katan's men go after them. It's a fight as the speeder is hit and crash lands in a hangar. They run until they find phone signal. As Maul's men move in, Satine sends a desperate, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope!" to the Jedi Council before they're all captured. Back on Coruscant, Obi-Wan meets with Ki-Adi Mundi and Yoda. They show him Satine's message, and he looks so upset, for a Jedi. He says that Death Watch isn't with the Separatists anymore. Mundi whips out some Jedi bullshit, saying that this is an internal matter, and the Jedi Council can't get involved with Mandalore, and there's nothing the Jedi can do, and Obi-Wan is not okay. What'd you think of Act 1?
Not bad, not bad.
A lot of action.
That's what I like about it. It starts out with Star Wars opening, action sequence, and it's a great chase with great sound design. It's sort of reminiscent of the beginning of the opening sequence of Episode 2 in Coruscant, except this time it's with Mandalorians. And as I was watching the scene, I was like, you know, when Scott Gardner and I were little kids, if somebody would have clipped that sequence out and shown it to us, our heads would have just fucking exploded. That was like what you wanted to see, you know, Mandalorians in action. It's sort of like when the prequels happened and, you know, whatever they gripe about the prequels, but you got to see Jedi in their full functioning capacity, you know. Mm-hmm. And this was like one of the best scenes of the Mandalorians in their full capacity, you know, flying and fighting. It was just a really neat, exciting visual sequence. And they got their help me. My other note is the help me Obi-Wan Kenobi line for sure. And I noticed one of the Mandalorians, his armor, he had modifications on his armor and he had little like Darth Maul horns.
Yeah. All of the, I call them the Maul Watch instead of the Death Watch. I call them Maul Watch in my notes.
The Mandalorians.
They all have red armor now and they all have little horns on their helmets.
Yeah. I like that, that you know, they got their leader and they're like, okay, your helmets are always evolving, you know, depending on your situation and stuff.
Hey,
another thing
it's a very Sabine thing to do because Sabine changes her armor every season.
Well, because Mandalorians are really into art and culture, you know, so it's making me feel very Thrawn-like, you know. And
It's also really nice and easy to tell who is Death Watch and who is Maul Watch.
Yes,
I
that's
true.
I think
they did that on purpose.
Well, yeah, well, that's the thing is it fits in with the whole idea of the Mandalorians, and it makes a handy little piece of visual language to tell you who's who because everybody has masks on, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very, very Star Wars. Very solving a problem with a visual solution. It's, a great, great opener for this episode. But that's all the notes I got.
So my first note is I'm going to go ahead and like do the big reveal of Act 3. It's not stated here. So I'm just going to spoil it now. Bo-Katan and Satine are sisters. That's the big reveal.
Sort of pick that up, though. Didn't you think that they were, if they weren't sisters, that they were somehow closely...
Or like friends or
related.
Something.
Yeah, there was a close connection to them for sure.
But I noticed something. Quirky calls, of course, Satine his aunt, and he says that Bo-Katan is here, that Satine's sister is here. And I realize neither one of them is Quirky's mother. So they have another sibling. Where is this sibling in all this?
She might not be a fighter. She might be just.
Or
like...
it might be a guy. It might be. She might. It might be. They might have a brother.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yep.
But, or maybe the mother or the brother, or this other sibling, died, and that's why they're not there. But
he might
I realize
not be
that...
a war. He might be a farmer or something. You know.
Yeah, but I realize that neither one of them is Quirky's mother. Where is Satine's brother and or sister? To be there. Because there's a lot of shit going down, and there should be another sibling somewhere going, hey, sisters, maybe you guys have put your shit aside and let's focus on fucking Mandalore. But I just had a moment because I was like, he was like, hey, auntie. And I was like, oh. And I was like, oh, wait, is Bo-Katan Quirky's mom? And he's like, she's here to help us. And he never once says, like, your mother. And I was, like, scanning Wikipedia, and I was Googling, like, who is Quirky's mother? And, like, I couldn't find it anywhere, so... Maybe he's adopted. No, he's too blonde and Aryan to not be Satine's family.
Yeah, that's
what am I
true.
Saying? All Mandalorians
They're
are blonde.
All have that blonde hair, yeah.
So, I also had a note, what a cool opening fight scene with all the Mandos. I also had that too. I just love the very subtle work that the animators did with Obi-Wan. As Satine's message is playing, he doesn't say anything, but like his body is very tense and his arms are crossed and he has a hand over his mouth. And as the message progresses, his hand gets tighter and tighter and like clutches his face like more and more. And it's so subtle, but you can just tell how much it's hurting him. And it's just really nice work on the animator's part.
Yeah.
That's the second time they've done that with Obi-Wan in a Maul episode. Because there was an earlier time where Maul sent a message to Obi-Wan and beheaded a bunch of people, and you saw, like, Obi-Wan's reaction. And so I like that subtle work that they do.
Yeah, it just gets better all the time as the technology gets better and their skill using it improves.
And if I can say, it's a very Ewan McGregor thing. Ewan McGregor is a very subtle actor, just like that. It just shows how much like the art is mimicking real life. Can we talk about, look at that more Jedi bullshit with no Eternal Affairs bullshit? I mean,
I'm so used to it now that, you know, I'm not even scandalized by it. It's like, yeah, of course they're going to do this. Yeah, you know?
Yeah, I feel like I was hoping there would at least be some kind of subtle change after the Saw Gerrera arc on Onderon, because they saw what happened and how, like, them not getting involved almost destroyed this fucking planet. But, like, it's different now because...
Well, this is sort of more of a, like, they can see that it's kind of like a personal thing of she's calling up her boyfriend to, but Yoda
understands, though. Mm-hmm. Oh, Yoda understands.
But there's also, like, the part of it of, like, I know there's all the politics that go into it, and again, this makes this such a good political episode, because Mandalore is the head of the neutral systems, and they want nothing involved, and of course the Jedi don't know that Maul is there. They just don't know Maul's there. So like they don't even see it as a Jedi affair. But I feel like where Onderon was like a backwater planet, that it was a test place to see if they can make insurgents, Mandalore is important. And it's an important place, and it's the head of the neutral systems. And like if Mandalore falls, these 2,000 planets will fucking fall with it. And so I feel like this, like, I can see why they didn't get involved with Onderon. I feel like this is the place where they should get fucking involved.
Well, I don't know. It's, you know, it's at this point, they're just, maybe they should, but if they
got... It just feels like a weak writing plot point. Like, okay,
if they got involved here, they would sort of be acknowledging that they should have gotten involved with other stuff earlier. You know, they've sort of painted themselves into a corner with their earlier policy, their non-interventionist policy. And it's very realistic because they've got this like non-interventionist policy, but at the same time, they do break it. if it's going to be, you know, really necessary for them to break it, they'll break it. But in this case, it's just like, yeah, we can't break it just because Obi-Wan's girlfriend got herself in a pickle, you know. If she had done things differently, things would be different and we could react differently. But yeah, it's sort of like sort of her problem, you know. And you could see Yoda going like, I'd like to help you, but you know, Yoda can't go rogue on the rest of the it's just part of the ongoing Jedi lameness that we've been watching since episode one.
for the overview of Clone Wars, it also is very fitting because half of Clone Wars is how the Jedi Order destroys itself.
Right. It's their downfall, so...
Mm-hmm. So I get it. It just, I feel like this is not the time for it. But
it's not fun.
Or at least having them let Obi-Wan bring like Anakin and Ahsoka with him.
Well, it's uncomfortable to watch. But yeah, this is they're on their downfall. So this is the time for them to be making bad decision after bad decision. You know.
Has Maul and Anakin ever met? I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think Maul and Anakin has ever met.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. On Tatooine.
Oh, when he was a babe.
Very briefly, Anakin has to jump on his belly and Maul, you know, flies over him and fights Obi-Wan until they take off in the ship. And that's it. That's it.
Yeah, man.
No. Anakin probably catches... Anakin is sitting in a spaceship on the hangar on Naboo when they first see Maul and go after him. I think that's before Anakin takes off and starts fighting. So Anakin might have seen Maul for a second in the hangar at Naboo too, but that's just a little kid Anakin.
Yeah. God, though I will say this episode would probably have been very different if Anakin and Ahsoka was there. Things would have probably progressed much differently. So, I mean, it
could have been neat for Anakin and him to clash because he could have, like, he could have actually freaked out Anakin. You know what I mean? Like a boogeyman from Anakin's childhood might, like, actually spook him, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, I do understand why they did it the way they did it, and it makes it easier when it's just Obi-Wan and it makes the stakes higher.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just Jedi bullshit just sometimes get on my nerves. All right, Chris, you want me to make a note of this, and I made a note of it last episode. I was supposed to bring up and remind you of bringing up Satine being pad-made and being steamrolled for the plot.
Yeah, just, well, it's just generally that's what sort of brings me down in this episode. It might have been a little better, I'm thinking now, to talk about it in the second part, but still, it's, you know, she started getting shortchanged in the last one by just being a weak character. And in this one, not only is she being a weak character for the most part, but we're just sort of seeing a repetition of, like, last episode again. You know, her. You know, we're going to get, like, almost an identical rescue this episode of her, you know? So she's just sort of going through the same... She's just sort of going through this process, like, the action for Satine... is escaping and getting recaptured and escaping and getting recaptured. It's not, it doesn't have any depth or, you know, or motivation to it, you know. And that's one of the major drawbacks, I think, of this episode for me.
I keep thinking back to, like, her first arc with Obi-Wan, and they were in the mind, like a mind together, and Obi-Wan was about to be crushed, and she got past the guards to stop the machine, to stop him from being crushed. And, like, even in that episode where, when they go up the elevator, she hides while Obi-Wan fights. She's still being supportive of Obi-Wan and, like, active.
Right.
And I feel like it's, like, and that's always been the case. Like, Obi-Wan's always been the fighter while she kind of sits in the background. But even then, like, she does little things like distracting people in battle so he can, like, best them and stuff. And I feel like it's not being done here.
She acts defeated in this, and but it's almost like they neglected to put in the scene where her spirit got broken. You know, you never see that. You know, when Pre Vizsla, like, took the crowd away from her, but that's not enough to break someone like her. You know, it would have to be someone's death or something really radical, and you just don't see it. You know, she's just suddenly a weak character.
It would have been different, say, if, like, in the fight, like, her nephew was killed.
Right. In front of her, or by her mistake, or, you know, or dies saving her, or something, you know?
Yeah.
Or dies pointlessly would be more of a spirit crusher than dies saving her, but, you know, something like that.
But I don't think it's as bad this time around, because I feel like she just sat on her hands all last episode, at least this time around. Like, I feel like she's, you know, trying to help out, and I don't feel like it's as bad as it was last week. Last week it was just, like, a massively distracting thing of the plot, where the plot was just running over her. So that's just me. I feel like it was much worse last week than this week. But that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
Nope, I'm ready for Act 2.
All right, Act 2. Alma catches Maul up on Satine's escape. Because of Mandalore's neutrality, the Jedi don't have jurisdiction on the planet. Maul knows that Obi-Wan is coming, and he'll be coming alone. Which is exactly what Obi-Wan does. He borrows Anakin's ship, the Twilight, which is busted up and smoking and catching on fire, and Obi-Wan makes it look like it needs repairs. Obi-Wan takes out the guard and steals his armor. He takes a speeder and heads to the prison. Little does Obi-Wan know that Bo-Katan saw the entire thing. He finds the teen's jail cell, and they hug because they're adorable, and I love them, and let the ship fly hard. And he takes her hand because he loves her and leads her out. And they are forced to take an elevator with another Maul Watch guy who is like, are you supposed to be moving the prisoner? And Obi-Wan knocks him out. They steal a speeder, but Maul Watch calls in the Duchess's escape. They race back to the Twilight, which is a bad time for the ship to not be working that great. And Savage and Maul show up to the party, and Obi-Wan's like, Well, fuck. And the twilight is hit, and they have to jump off the ship. And there's Maul, ready to force-choke his enemy, and he's so happy that Obi-Wan is there. And they take Satine and Obi-Wan back to the palace. Maul is sitting like a Sith king on his throne, Satine at his side, and Obi-Wan knelt before him. He force-chokes Satine in front of Obi-Wan, saying that the Jedi's emotions betray him. He wants Obi-Wan to feel the dark side. But Obi-Wan says that Maul can kill him, but Maul will never destroy him. Obi-Wan tries to reason with Maul, saying that he's seen Maul's village, and he knows what the Night Sisters made him into, and made him join the dark side. But Maul blows him off, saying that he never planned to kill Obi-Wan. He just wants to make Obi-Wan suffer. And he whips out the darksaber, and he shanks Satine, and everything stops. And I cry as she falls to the floor, and Obi-Wan holds her, and Satine says with her last breath that she always loved Obi-Wan, and she will always love Obi-Wan, and then I cry more, and Maul has Obi-Wan taken away to a prison cell to rot his misery. What do you think of it too, Chris?
You can tell Satine's is on the way out because her hair is so messed up. But in this episode, it's like each rescue, her hair is just more and more messed up. I noticed that little thing.
I love her hair down. It made me wish that she wore her hair down more in the show. I love her hair down.
Once again, here's you defeat your foe. Probably should kill your foe because bad idea leaving Obi-Wan alive. I know, but it's a bad idea if you're Machiavellian Maul. That's just not what you do. But my other note is there's just a rescue every 5 minutes. I'm leaving all the feelings to you if you haven't noticed.
I actually like the Twilight one though, like with the ship exploding and like it's spinning out of control and they're holding on and they fly off. Like I do like watching. I like the second rescue better because it's even though the fight in the action opening was really cool. I kind of wish they put the two together. Like, maybe, like, Obi-Wan ran into Corky, and Corky's like, hey, we're off to save my aunt. And he's like, cool, I'll come help you. And so it was, like, a mix of the Mandos fighting, and they distract him while Obi-Wan gets away with Satine, and then they get on the Twilight. God, that would have been an awesome sequence, just to put the two together.
Yeah. The shot of the missiles hitting Obi-Wan's ship and it going down were really nicely done, too.
I just like it spinning and them hanging off of it and stuff. That was just really nice.
But a lot of this part was sort of like not rehashing, but it was very much like in a couple arcs that we've seen where they have a similar story arc and of capturing and escaping. So there were very similar things of like, you know, the cell door opening of the prison cell and like making your way out the corridor and trying to get to a ship and trying to get out and then getting recaptured. Very similar to last episode. So that was...
I would have rather have it trimmed up to have some more time of just Obi-Wan and Satine and maybe them having a talk, because that would have like also made like the death way more emotional.
Yeah, but at the same time, there's some weight put to it in the just sort of suddenness of it happening and like the shift in tone, because when Obi-Wan first gets here, he's being comical, you know, he's playing a sort of bumbling oaf with his the crappy ship. He's like, all right, I got, which is kind of jerky of Anakin to give him a crappy ship on a life or death mission, but whatever. But he's using it, you know, he's being like, oh, look, I'm bumbly space jockey, you know, not Jedi guy, look at me in my crummy ship, and uses that to get ahead. But it's kind of it's a little funny. And then they shift gears into like seriously, you know, sad and serious. So I like that. It's just yanking you all over the place, but And just like the last one, the things that I'm griping about are sort of really part of it being like, all right, this is, you know, they're winding up the arc. And so they can't really shade it in much more than they already have. I just wish, you know, I'm just wishing for more. So that means it's good.
I mean, they could have done something as simple as, like, Obi-Wan knocking out a guard and giving Satine the armor, and she's wearing the armor, and she's just like, oh, this is awkward.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of little directions and shadings and nuances that could have been done with more time with this that would have really, like, amped up the drama in it even more so, or you know, or filled it in just a little bit, but... Yeah, it's minor quibbles. But that's all the notes I got. I've left you the feeling space to.
I don't actually have as many feelings. I think a lot of it is because I knew it was coming. Like, yeah. if this was the first time I watched it, I would have been like, oh my god! But like, I knew it was coming. But so I
even if you haven't seen it, it was sort of like looking like that was a very strong. Well, Obi-Wan can't have a girlfriend either. There's always that.
That's one of my notes, is that Satine isn't in the original trilogy, so you know that something had to happen.
Right, right.
That's actually one of my notes.
actually, Obi-Wan should have been like, yeah, like, hey, you want to come live on a nice... We could live on the... It's got the world's largest beach.
Tatooine?
Mm-hmm.
The world's not... It's
all beach.
Does it qualify as a beach if there's no ocean?
We got some beachfront property. If there's a puddle of water somewhere, the rest of it's beach.
I just imagine it being like Obi-Wan just pours out a canteen and he's like, the ocean! And it just dries up instantly and he's like, aw. That was all my water for the month. Satine is like, I'd rather have died on Mandalore. okay, so first I want to talk about Obi-Wan when he first arrives, and he's in his Rocco Hardeen, which, by the way, nice callback to that, and having him wear his Rocco Hardeen outfit from...
Why waste a good disguise if you got one, you know?
Yeah, that's a nice callback. And I want to talk about that scene because, actually talking about that arc, I think he learned a lot by that time being with Cad Bane and during that Bounty Hunter arc. Because Obi-Wan's being a bit harsh and reckless. Like, he's just knocking out guards, stealing armor. Like, he's just kind of, like, bowling through it and just kind of... I guess spontaneous is the word. Like, he's just kind of making it up as he goes, and he's improvising really fast.
That's Obi-Wan, though.
But I also feel like it's a lot that he picked up from Cad Bane. Like, that's what he did for four freaking episodes, is right. He just had to pick up things on the fly.
Well, because... he's being a scoundrel here, too. He's being deceptive and infiltrating. Yeah. He's operating outside. He's not operating as a Jedi, either. So he's...
Yeah. And it just really reminded me a lot of, like, Cad Bane. Like, things that he did where he had to, like, kind of make up things on the fly and go. And so I feel like... So that's why it was such a nice callback that he was wearing the armor... because it felt like something, a very Cad Bane-like thing to do. But it's also a very Anakin thing to do. He's being a little reckless like Anakin is.
Well, he's also acting on his girlfriend, which Anakin is doing a lot, too.
Has Padme been in this season? I don't think she has.
I don't think so. If maybe we've seen her, like, in a scene standing around or something, but I don't remember her in any of the stories so far.
She hasn't been in this. I don't think she's been in this season at all. But yeah, like I don't know. If it was Anakin, he would just, like, murder his way through.
Yeah. It would.
But I mean, I really liked that because it kind of shows this different side of Anakin. I mean, I'm sorry, of Obi-Wan, and it really reminded me a lot of how he had to act in that Bounty Hunter arc. So I thought it was just really cool. So I just had to talk about the Twilight for a second. Because Anakin obviously knows about Satine and Obi-Wan, and he lets his master borrow his ship. And I just think that's such a nice thing, because, like, I see that conversation. Anakin would just be like, you don't get to fly my ship. And all Obi-Wan had to say was, Satine's in danger. And Anakin would automatically understand and, like, let him take the Twilight. And so I just think that's just such a super sweet thought that, like, Anakin was just like, yeah, man, I understand. You can have my ship. It's broken.
Good luck. Yeah, I'm working on it, but, yeah, you can take it if you want, yeah.
I kind of felt like it was broken on purpose, though.
Well, that's
like,
the thing is, Anakin is a mechanical whiz, so his ship should be like the Millennium Falcon. It might look ugly, but it should be like all like gussied up and in good working order, because that's his thing. But then again, maybe he's always experimenting with it, and it's all sort of like half-completed experiments and stuff. But it was just falling apart. Pieces were just, like, falling off it, and bolts were bouncing around. So I have to think it was, like almost like a joke, you know? Almost like he was like, oh, here you go. This should be funny when the, you know, when the tail section falls off when he lands.
Oh, yeah, it's hilarious when Obi-Wan dies against Maul, Anakin. That's fucking hilarious. Hilarious.
Anakin knows it. The episode 3 is coming up, so.
But I like that idea that, like, Anakin was probably just like, why do you want the Twilight? And all Obi-Wan had to say was, Satine's in danger. And, like, Anakin would probably automatically understand. On one hand, I was like, I really wish I got to see that scene, but it's implied enough that I'm kind of, I can imagine it, and, like, in my mind, it's better. Mm-hmm. So. Okay, I want to talk about Obi-Wan, and I have it broken into two parts about how amazing Obi-Wan is in this part where Maul is pretty much kill Satine. First, like, Maul is force choking the love of his life, and Obi-Wan is still super calm. And what I liked about it is, instead of getting, like, upset or angry, Obi-Wan tries to reason with Maul, and he's giving Maul sympathy. Which Maul
He kind of Hannibal Lecters him, but at the same time, yeah, he is. He's saying, like, look, man, you know, he's giving him an out, really.
Yeah, and Maul in no way deserves Obi-Wan's sympathy. Because, he, like, murdered, like, Qui-Gon and everything. But Obi-Wan is still being kind here, and he's like, look, I understand where you come from, and I've seen where you come from, and I understand the terrible things that have been done to you, and I want you to know that I will help you. And, of course, Maul doesn't take it, but, like, that's such a... And, like, while Satine is choking in the background...
It hits him for a second, though, because nobody's really shown any kindness to Darth Maul before that. Maybe a little from Tippy the Tapeworm, but Tippy the Tapeworm even, like... bit him in the ass.
But I mean, like, what a big moment that is for him. Like, that, I think that's just, like, I think the easy thing would have been, like, Obi-Wan acting out and being angry and attacking Maul. And I think that's actually kind of what Maul was expecting.
That was, Maul might have been trying to get a nice little lightsaber fight, but that would have worked better with Anakin than Obi-Wan.
Yeah, and so, and my other point, actually, that's my next point. Which was, I just think it's so big that, like, Obi-Wan didn't act in anger, because Anakin, man, things would have been getting crushed with the Force.
Everybody,
like,
would
Anakin,
have been dead. Everybody would have,
like,
been.
Windows
would have
been blowing out.
Place.
Yeah, like, windows would have been blowing out, and, like, Maul would have been thrown with the Force against the throne, and,
it
like...
It would have been Sand People Village Part 2.
So I just have to so, like, so much admire Obi-Wan in that moment, because... He went the harder route, and he went the harder route,
well,
and
because
he Jedi route.
He went there to save her, and once she was gone, it's like, pretty much, it's like, extract yourself from there. You know, he shouldn't be there in the first place, really, technically, legally, or, you know, ethically, or whatever. He shouldn't even be there, and once she's gone, it's like... Then it becomes even trickier. He's got to sort of extricate himself from the situation. So, yeah, he did a good job, because, yeah. I think because Obi-Wan's just that sort of good-natured, nice guy, that, like, her death was just, instead of inspiring anger, he would just had the wind completely taken out of him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was more just like... complete sadness than the anger, and Obi-Wan isn't, that's not one of his characteristics, is anger. That's something he has as a Jedi probably gotten, that's not his weak point, you know. He's gotten a whole, if you're a Jedi, you shouldn't have to worry about the anger, even if it is your lady friend you're not supposed to have. I was going to say illegitimate, but that doesn't sound right. But, so, I wasn't surprised that Obi-Wan didn't get angry. But
I thought
the way they portrayed his reaction and the way that they showed the sadness and hurt in him for an animated character was really good and really subtle, as part of the course with Obi-Wan in Clone Wars. They're doing a good job. While at the same time he's Obi-Wan Kenobi, at the same time you're getting a bit of Ewan McGregor in there too, you know? Or the parts of Obi-Wan Kenobi that Ewan McGregor added in, which were also built off Alec Guinness. It's just really well done.
I was just thinking thinking about it, something I also just love so much about that scene is I think it shows so much of what the human side of the Jedi, which I don't think we get to see very often. Because usually when we see the Jedi, they're kind of like this, like, they're like the Windus or the Ki-Adi Mundis, right, or the Plo Koons and stuff. But here we get to see, like, it was a very a million voices cried out in silence kind of moment, where it's just complete and utter sadness and just pain, which I don't feel like we ever get to see with any of the Jedi. And being able to see it with Obi-Wan, a character we know so well in so many different ways, with so many different actors, I love that.
This is the first big loss for Obi-Wan since Qui-Gon, I think.
Yeah. And, like, I think a lot of it is, you know, somebody innocent died. And we've seen Obi-Wan handle innocence, like, innocence being, like snuffed out. But, like, this time it's personal. And I think it really helps humanize him, both as, not just as a Jedi, but as a person, which is...
You've got that, like, in Obi-Wan's life, it's really kind of cool. It's cool. It's awful for Obi-Wan, but the three great losses for Obi-Wan, which is first Qui-Gon, his master, and then the love of his life, and then Anakin. You know, his.
Now that I think about it, is the first one with Qui-Gon, we saw Obi-Wan react in anger.
Yes.
And so that's nice because it shows how much he's grown since then.
Well, and think of this. This just popped in. He reacted in anger, and that anger actually, in the context of episode one, worked out for him because he just came in and just like...
Slaughtered Maul.
Beat the hell out of Maul and cut him in half. But not really, though. Even though he cut him in half... It ended up into blossoming into something that would take the love of his life away from him.
Yeah.
So reacting in anger to Darth Maul that time might have cost him his girly friend.
Yeah, like if he had been kind then, what would have happened? I mean, how would have things have turned out different? Because we know when Maul was Spider-Maul and he was just like mumbling and stuff like that, Maul even says, they didn't show me mercy. They didn't show me kindness. And he's speaking about the Jedi. He's like, the Jedi didn't show me mercy. What if Obi-Wan had shown him mercy then?
Mm-hmm.
How would things have gone differently?
I don't know if it really would have worked out still. He could have shown him mercy. I think Maul would have still, it would have been very similar to this one.
But at least it might have been different. Like, if Obi-Wan tried to show him mercy and Maul still fought back, then it would be self-defense.
Well,
and it's a different
thing. It's telling that that's how Obi-Wan dealt with him the second time that he has a chance to deal with him, that he shows him mercy. And this is after Maul has, you know, killed Qui-Gon, too.
Yeah.
And lots of people in the galaxy in the name of inflaming Obi-Wan Kenobi. So, you know, he has every reason to be angry and to react in anger at Maul, but the next time he confronts him, he's taking the higher ground. He's got the high ground.
The next time he confronts him is twin sons, which I have a note about in Act 3. Actually, I'm going to just go ahead and jump to that note now because we're talking about it. Where did I write that note? Here's my Act 3 note about twin sons, because the next time Maul and Obi-Wan are together is Rebels. I have to really appreciate the Rebels episode Twin Sons even more with Maul and Obi-Wan meet up, especially after all this. Maul has taken both Qui-Gon and Satine from Obi-Wan, and he's caused this Jedi so much pain. But Obi-Wan almost welcomes him like a friend before their duel, and he comforts Maul in his death. And it just adds just so much about both of those characters. Because that is their third meeting after this. I'm going to let you know now, they don't meet again in Clone Wars.
That's true, and it gets more merciful. Obi-Wan gets more merciful as Maul gets more bent on his death.
Yeah, so I think that's a beautiful progression, that he goes from anger to openness to friendly. And that just says so... Oh, wow!
All right, all you gripers, and you wouldn't have none of that shit without the prequels, so stop crying.
Oh, man, I just got really warm and touched in my heart at Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, God, Obi-Wan is easily one of my favorite characters of Star Wars, he's so good, and this is just such a beautiful, beautiful thing, and such a beautiful scene, and it just shows his progression and how much he grows over the course of both shows, the prequels and the original trilogy. It's so wonderful. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm just, like, so touched at this realization. Okay.
Revelations and realizations.
Oh, man. I'm like, touching my heart right now. Like, I'm just, that was so good. And just, like, I didn't go too much into Satine's death, like I said, but just looking back at it, like, it's very beautifully lit. Like, the scene of him, like, holding Satine and the light is behind him is just gorgeous. She looks beautiful in death. And he, like, crosses his arms over her. It's so nice and subtle. The music is beautiful in that scene.
And meanwhile, like, Maul's letting all that happen just so he can soak in that he just killed her and, you know, on top
of it. And he's sitting back on his throne like fucking Joffrey from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
It's just, that entire scene is just very beautifully done. It's so subtle, and it's just her last words to him that she always loved him and always will, and, like, he just looks so shocked, and he's cradling her face. It's just, the entire scene's just beautiful. It's just so gorgeous. I'm so just, emotional right now. I'm still on our Maul and Obi-Wan thing. They should date! I know there's fan fiction.
So that first lightsaber fight is a meeting cute?
Yeah, it's
no, the first meet cute's on Tatooine, fighting over...
A boy, a tiny boy.
Over a kid, yeah.
The boy that they will adopt and love to forever.
We met on the beach.
Oh my God, I read a really sweet fan fiction this morning over coffee.
I was taking my foster child to the beach, and we met, and he was just amazed at how wonderful it was that I was taking care of this young orphan boy.
That was pretty much kind of like the fan fiction I read this morning. It was Agent Callus and Zeb on Lusan after the Rebels finale. And they find a baby, and they're like, we should raise this baby. And Zeb's like, do you really want to raise a baby with me? And he's like, yes, I love you. And I was like, I love you guys!
Zeb's like, I say we eat the baby.
No, it was a Lasat baby. So they adopted her, and they named her Pippa.
Oh, Jesus.
That was great. It was adorable.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. That's all I have
for
Part
3?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Chris, that was such a good discussion. I'm so amazed right
Good
by
talk, Hope. Good talk.
High five. And I would slap my mic, but that would be a bad day. High five. All right. Act 3?
All right. Break. Act 3.
For the awesome fucking fight scene?
All right, yeah, here's where it's all about. This is where it's all about for Chris on this episode.
Yeah. All right, Act 3. On Coruscant, Papa Palpatine senses a disturbance in the Force, and he orders for his ship to be ready. Back on Mandalore, Obi-Wan is super upset as they take him to prison. But Bo-Katan's men arrive and rescue Obi-Wan. They give him a jetpack and fly off. It's Death Watch versus Maul Watch as they fly into a hangar. Obi-Wan opens the hangar door, and lordy lord, there is a battle raging on the other side. Bo-Katan gets Obi-Wan to a ship, and she demands him to tell the Republic what happened. Obi-Wan says that the Republic will invade Mandalore, and Bo-Katan agrees, but Maul will die, and Mandalore will always survive. And Obi-Wan realizes that Bo was Satine's sister, and he apologizes for her loss, and he gets on a ship and leaves. A ship arrives on Mandalore, and it's freaking Darth Sidious strolling off the ship. And he kills the guards and takes the speeder. Maul senses a presence, and he's suddenly stricken with fear. Papa Palpatine has arrived, and the sun is about to get it. Maul takes a knee, and I bet Savage is like, WTF is going on, bro? Who the hell is this guy? Because I've never seen him before. And it's all evil pomp and circumstance as they exchange evil pleasantries. And Papa Palpatine sees through Maul's lies and isn't that impressed with his little Mando Empire or with Savage. And Palpatine attacks Maul and Savage, easily force throwing them around. And it's Super Mario Bros fighting for their lives as Papa Palpatine takes them to Sith school. And it's an amazing fight. It's so good. Another favorite of mine of Clone Wars. And Palpatine just kicks the crap out of the Mario Bros. He knocks out Maul and takes on Savage one-on-one. And Savage is easily killed right in front of Maul. And Savage admits that he was never like Maul as he turns back into his soft boy phase and he dies. And Maul is pissed and whips out the Darksaber to take on Palpatine. It's Master versus Ex-Apprentice as their fight continues. And Palpatine slams Maul to the ground, and Maul begs for mercy. And Palpatine's like, that's cute, but no mercy from the Sith. And he uses his Force Lightning on Maul, but he has no plan to kill his quote-unquote old friend. The end.
Oh, he still has uses for him.
Oh, God, I love this fucking fight scene.
Yeah, this part is what made the episode for me. We're seeing some of the Sith being more keyed into the Force, whereas, like, you know, I've been on that whole Yoda knows everything. Yeah, Yoda don't know shit in this one. Palpatine's the one who's on the game in this one, going like, something's happening over here, and he's probably known there's something been going on with Maul, but he's just been waiting for the right time to go and do his thing. And, and that's when the big guns come in and it's just like, yes, here we go. just like you said, daddy's home. And
I just imagine that the OK Go song, here it goes again.
Maul gets, once again, is sensed Palpatine and gets Vader's line from Star Wars where he's like, I sense a presence I haven't felt since. And Obi-Wan is completely just sort of like, that there's some Sith Lord on the way, that they're sort of crossing paths or anything.
Well, he is like running through a fucking battle, so
yeah, but
he's
still
a little distracted right now.
Yeah, but still, it seems like there's powerful Sith things going on, but the Jedi are completely tuned out of that, so Obi-Wan doesn't even know that the shit's about to really go down. I'm very surprised. Let me do my surface notes first, probably. I love the scene of the door open, like the one battle ending and then the door opening and then just another battle going on the other side of it.
I have a note about that. That was a classic
Star Wars scene.
That is actually one of the most iconic images of Clone Wars. That constantly pops up for this episode.
That's a Star Wars movie-worthy shot.
And it is also, like, one of the top images of Clone Wars as a whole. That's like Rex walking into Umbara with his men. Like, it is one of the most iconic scenes of Clone Wars, and it's constantly pops up all the time if you Google Clone Wars. It's almost – that scene's going to be top in the Google searches. It's one of the top images of Clone Wars of all time.
Yeah, it's something about it very much feels like cinematic Star Wars. And there's a lot of, in this part, there's a lot of classic Star Wars intercutting between the two sets of action going on, which now into my Palpatine stuff. I'm very surprised that Palpatine does not mention Dooku to Savage. Like, oh, look, I've got Dooku's little puppy here or something like that. Oh, are you Dooku's little puppet? Or, something to that, something demeaning, just like, oh, you're the flunky to my flunky or something just to twist the knife in. I would have written something like that. And I liked where where, you know, Maul gives him his whole pitch, you know, Master, I've been softening him up, everybody, for you. You know, now we can take over the galaxy together, right, Master? Master? And he's just like, no, now you are a rival. I love that he uses the word rival. You are now a rival. And it's just like, yes, we know what happens to rivals of Palpatine. And the other line, you have been replaced. And it's like, so what does that mean? At first, you know, logically, it's like, okay, he's been replaced by Dooku. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if he necessarily means that. I think in Palpatine's heart, and Palpatine actually probably Yoda-like seeing the future, might already consider Anakin as his protege at this point, you know. Just all the pieces haven't fallen into place. They're almost there, though. So when he said, you've been replaced, it very well, to me, could have meant Anakin.
I can see that, yeah.
But let's just say I was very happy to see Palpatine just doing
Palpatine things?
Yeah, picking up Maul and slamming him against the wall and then bam, face down into the ground, you know.
I like when Palpatine gets thrown out and he's falling and he just force grabs Maul and Savage and pulls them with him. And they're all three falling, and they all land on their feet like cats. Like, that's a cool moment.
Yeah, yeah. And when he's fighting with two lightsabers and really going action hero, but at the same time, he's getting mad, but he wants to get mad, you know? He's toying with them a little bit, but at the same time, they're a threat. It's almost like the fight with Pre Vizsla and Maul. Except, you know, Palpatine is definitely toying a little bit, but yeah, you know, there's still a bit of a challenge. He's fighting two of them, and he has to work on it. At first you think he's going to be sort of like when he's fighting Yoda in Episode 3, just like wee ha ha ha, but no, he's just like, yeah, I love it.
Actually, I have a note about that. Because there are a few times.
That's all I got. So let's hit your notes. You got a
wall.
Nice wall of them here.
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned it, Episode 3, because that's one of my shallow notes. Because you know how he's like all campy when he's fighting Yoda, mm-hmm. and he's just laughing the entire time. Well, they actually added a few times in this fight Palpatine laughing as he's fighting Maul, which was nice because it kind of reinforces him doing that in Episode 3. There are a few times where
he loves
like
it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's...
He has to hold back most of the time, and when he gets a chance to, like...
Go for it.
Now I get to, like, come out of the Sith closet and be myself. Yeah, I'm going to enjoy... Why wouldn't you enjoy yourself, you know?
Yeah, and so, like, I actually really like that they added in, like, Palpatine, like, cackling at times as he's fighting them, because it really kind of reinforces Episode 3 when he's doing the exact same thing with Yoda, and it makes it not as campy. You know,
because he's laughing it up, but other times there's a few points where he's holding both his lightsaber and he's got a sneer on his face, you know.
Yeah.
So it's going back and forth.
Yeah.
With Yoda, he was just like, wee! I think at that point he also, like, when all his dominoes had fallen. So he knew Yoda wasn't going to be around to fight him for very long. So he was just like, hee, don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Yeah. Okay, so back to my bigger notes. You know, before this, Palpatine has really took a backseat to this entire Maul thing. Like, he's been keeping tabs on Maul because, like, Dooku knew about Maul. And in the season opener where Obi-Wan faced Maul, like, Palpatine was like, we don't need to worry about this Darth Maul thing. But now that, like, Maul actually has real power and has an army, it is time for Sith Dad to reel his child back in.
And in Clone Wars and in Rebels, it's best to have Palpy be once in a while. You know, really his crowning achievements are Episode 3 and Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
All of that he needs, besides those two, he needs to just be on the edges, and every once in a while we just need to be reminded
that he's terrifying.
This is one of those moments, yeah, and it's awesome. It's similar to Rebels when Darth Vader shows up the first
time. That's my fucking note!
Oh, sorry.
No. I'm so happy you made that, because that was exactly... I was waiting for you to finish talking so I can say that exact same thing. It's the same... As I think a lot of it is because, like, it's a little bit different in the original trilogy because, like, the technology was different, so we don't get to see all of the craziness. And then in episode 3, it's kind of campy, but we get to see him in power. This, I feel, is different, and this is what I feel like Rebels hit it on with Vader. Because we've said multiple times, Rebel was the first time, because it was before Rogue One, that we got to see Vader be fucking terrifying.
Since Star Wars. I mean... When Star Wars first came out, Vader was terrifying. He was the mysterious. He was the Emperor. He was a mysterious character in Star Wars, and and the more we learned about him, and especially in the prequels, did a lot to demystify him, and so that episode of Rebels and Rogue One were quite a magic trick to bring back. No, Darth Vader is something to be feared.
Yeah.
And if you follow the comics illustrate it fairly well, too.
The current Vader comic is terrifying. It's so good. But, like, that's how I feel about Palpatine, because, like, we so rarely get to see... Because usually when Palpatine fights, it's, like, Force lightning. We don't see him with a lightsaber, and now he has two.
Yeah.
Like, that moment where, like, he's standing before Maul, and, like, one lightsaber comes out of his sleeve, and he lights it, and then the second one comes out, and you're just like, oh, shit. And just, like, him walking to the palace, like, he's just force-choking guards left and right. Like, he's not even breaking a sweat. Like, it's so terrifying, and it is just like that scene where Vader shows up in Rebels. It's just so scary, and you're right. Like, it doesn't need to be used a lot, but when it's done, it's just... amazing.
You know what? You just made... I don't know what made me think of this, but this would have been neat if either one of them did this. When Savage died and his green Night Sister's magic is leaking out of him, wouldn't it been great if either Palpatine... It would have probably been creepier with Palpatine if Palpatine just went like... and sucked up the Night Sister magic and absorbed it and was like, yum, yum. or if Maul, who's, of the Night Sister magic himself, was able to absorb, like, his brother and, like, beef up a little bit, that might have been neat. That would have been a little superhero-y, but, like, if Palpatine would have just been like, oh, yummy green Night Sister gas.
I can imagine him, like, snorting it like a line of cocaine.
Yeah, just snorted him up and been like, yeah, brother's delicious. That would have been, like, evil.
Yeah. My next note is kind of what you were saying about Obi-Wan leaving, but on a different point of view. I'm actually, like, after everything and, like, Mandalore's in chaos and everything, I am a little surprised that Obi-Wan left Maul. Of course, Obi-Wan doesn't realize that, Sidious is there, but Obi-Wan is greatly outnumbered. But I don't know, there's just something, like, I agree, there's something odd about Obi-Wan just leaving. And
He might be like, I'm not in the right frame of mind to do anything good. I'm not.
And Bo-Katan did point out a good point of, like, you need to go get the Republic. Like, yeah.
And also, Obi-Wan could have been like, I'm not going to do anything I do here is not going to help, at this point. It might have been just better even just not to do anything at that point.
Actually, to connect everything from here to Rebels, because... We don't get to see the resolution of this civil war because, A, they never got a chance to make it. The final arc of what was supposed to be the final arc was the Siege of Mandalore, where the Republic is there and they're trying to get Mandalore under control and stuff like that. So we do know that the Siege of Mandalore was going to be the final arc, so we didn't get to see it in Clone Wars. But also, we can assume that the Republic got Mandalore under control because they're under Imperial control and Rebels. Sabine went to the Imperial Academy on Rebels. And so we can assume what happened, and probably because of this moment where Obi-Wan is like, where Bo-Katan was like, go get the Republic, it set them up for falling into place for the Empire. Yeah. I've already said that note. Can we talk about the poor damn travesty that Savage is?
You mean the, like, the brief, tragic, and pointless and savage life that he led?
Yeah, okay, so Savage's life, since his first episode, he got used by Dooku, Asajj, and Maul, and treated like garbage, and Mother Talzin manipulate him, and now he's shanked and died. Like, this guy had never had a chance.
Nope.
But, like, I was thinking about his last words that he said to his brother, and he told Maul, as he's turning back into his soft boy phase, that he was never like Maul, which I think was super telling, because I started thinking back to his very first episode. Like, he had a brother that he cared for, and he fought for, and he protected, and he was always this, like, a much nicer guy until he got manipulated by Talzin and manipulated by all these people. And I think his life is just super tragic, because we saw how kind he was and how much he loved this other person, and they forced him to kill him. They brainwashed him. They changed him physically. And it's just, I almost would love to see who Savage would have become if he didn't have all this other shit going on. His life is a fucking tragedy.
Yeah, he could have had just a nice, normal life on the in the village, you know?
I guess it just goes back to what we were saying of, like, if they didn't even ever bring Maul back and they just used Savage the entire time, what would have happened? I just feel so bad for him, because he was a completely different person in his very first episode.
They would have had to turn him into something more like what Maul is here if they wanted to make him into an interesting character. Because he never was kind of a interesting character. It's kind of meta in a way, because he was sort of just like a copy of Darth Maul anyway.
I think his first episode is when he was the most interesting, because he had somebody protect and we saw this kinder side of him.
Well,
and
if
he was supposed to be a meta Maul, at least he had a different, because Maul never had a person to care for. At least it gave him a different side of what Maul could have been.
Well, when I first saw it, I just took it as they're like, well, they killed off Darth Maul, but they'd like to have Darth Maul back, and this is their way of doing it. And then it's almost like they were like, yeah, this guy isn't working out as well. Why don't we just bring back Darth Maul? And that if I was in the writer room, I'd be like, ah, no way. But it actually turned out to be a really good decision, because I don't think if we would have just had, I don't think he would have gotten taken as, even no matter how much character you gave him, he would have always been sort of like a second rate copy of Maul.
But what if they like played that where everybody was like, why aren't you more like Darth Maul? That could have been a really good character motivation for him. He was like always in Maul's shadow, no matter what he did.
Yes, yeah, it could have been, but it still wouldn't have been like, you know, I mean, what we ended up with is like a violent family drama, and which is a lot better than just like basically, you know, a sort of weaker Darth Maul with Napoleon syndrome, little brother, middle child syndrome, or whatever.
Yeah, it'd
be younger brother syndrome, but like acting like middle child syndrome.
Yeah, but I feel so bad because Savage just never had a chance ever.
Yeah, poor guy. He's rotten in hell with Tippy the Tapeworm now.
Yeah. And so my last note for this episode is, it's actually a kind of a two-part note. And I was thinking about this last, when we were talking about the last episode, when Maul was fighting Pre Vizsla, why didn't he use the Force more? And I kind of rationalized in my brain that they were having a warrior's duel, so it wouldn't have been a fair fight because they were trying to like fight on equal terms. But then here, as we're fighting Palpatine, Maul doesn't use the Force at all. Palpatine is clearly, like, throwing him around, Force up and down, slamming him with the Force. But why doesn't Maul use the Force back?
He's been sliced up. He's lost half his body. It's very much like Anakin. You know, Darth Vader cannot do the things that Anakin could do in the Clone Wars because he's had a bunch of extremities chopped off. which his midichlorians lived in, and now just has machinery there. And Darth Maul has a different pair of you know what I mean?
Yeah. So and that was exactly what I, like, when he was back when he was still Spider Maul, after he got his brand new, like, two legs instead of Spider Maul, we actually get a scene of him trying to use the Force, and he's struggling to use the Force. So I think that's a very nice callback, is that he is struggling to use the Force, which is very interesting for me. I think that's a very nice throw through, because that's the conclusion I came to as well, which was they've already established that he can't use the Force like he once did.
Yes.
And my final note was, I just like coward Darth Maul when he's begging for mercy, and Sidious is like, nope.
There's always a bigger fish.
To fry! Fish fry! I think that's a cool moment. But it also goes back to Spider Maul when he was talking about how the Jedi and the Sith never gave him mercy, and it just drives him even more. But that's all I have.
All right, you ready for my interesting score?
I know from last week you probably scored way lower.
Well, I was going to give this about halfway through the second part. I was like, this is going to get an 8.5. I like this episode a lot, but it's doing a lot of the repetitive themes from the last episode, even though there's like a high.
But did our talk change your mind?
No, what changed my mind is Palpy showing up at the end. So this one took probably would have gotten like an 8, and so now it's up to a 9 just for that last part, for that fight with Palpy. That was so well done and so awesome that it gets a 9. So it's brought right up to the level of the last episode in my eyes.
Yeah. For me, this is just such a good episode, and now after talking, like, I just appreciate Obi-Wan so much more. Like, I wrote, great Obi-Wan action, but I mean, honestly, like, as we were talking and, like, breaking down Obi-Wan between episode 1 to Rebels, like, it's just, our talk prop made it a lot better. It's just so many great fights, and Palpatine is amazing, and Satine's death is heartbreaking, and now there's a Mandalorian Civil War breaking out, and, like, Palpatine gets action, and Maul Savage are defeated, and this is just such good stuff.
Yep.
So I'm giving it an extra point, extra like little half point, because originally I had it a 9.10, but after we talked about Obi-Wan, I gotta give it like a 9.25 or something, a little bit higher than what I originally rated it, because I never thought about Obi-Wan in that way, and it's been a while since one of our talks have like touched me like that, so. I was half expecting you to be like, touched you. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review the show, it helps people find the show. And this week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, Secret Warriors.
And after all the love of this episode, As Hope says, for here, pour on the haterade and welcome.
Oh, where's my voice?
What's that?
Where's my voice? Pour on the haterade.
Pour on the haterade and welcome to the least favorite arc in Clone Wars.
Yep.
All right. So Robert Bell says, me and you are on the exact same page. This arc is the worst. And Hope Mullinex says, we had a lot of fun hating on it, though. And then I said, I'm usually the apologist for this kind of stuff, but not this time. I'm giving myself a more steely Clint Eastwood voice. I'm usually not an apologist.
You should have a Christopher Walken voice.
I can't do Christopher Walken. Maybe I'll hire Bill. I can get Bill Robinson to do it for me. I'm not a good Shatner either. I'm not a good impressionist, really. But I'll stick with a flinty Clint Eastwood / Kurt Russell, maybe. Usually apologist for this kind of stuff, but not this time. Maybe 5% Batman. And then Patrick Delmore says, it sucks! And then Aaron Henley, being the nice guy he is, doesn't pile on, but just says, Which is such a darn shame, as we get an arc with Katie the R2 and Gregor, the first and only Republic commando we see. I know you hit
not,
a foul.
Not the first, because we got them in an earlier episode.
The first one we know by name, like.
Yeah.
I know you hit a foul ball every once in a while, but why did it have to be now? It was more than one foul ball. Then Patrick Delmore adds in, if you haven't edited all four episodes, look at Robot Parade by They Might Be Giants from their album, No! And I said, it's going to happen, and guess what? It happened!
Yay!
And then Paul C. Kelly comes in and says, I think this episode could have gone up at least to the point if someone voice acted out loud all the thoughts and bleeps of R2-D2 in response to everything that Gascon was doing and saying, LOL, oh yeah. Actually, feel free to say what you think R2-D2 did say. And think when you read this, LOL. Oh, yeah. Then Patrick Delmore says, I notice no one has pointed out that Chopper talks. Rewatching Rebels, they've done phonetic gag lines that he drops. In an early episode, Chopper is asked to shoot Ezra if he tries anything. Chopper responds with what gun?
Actually, something they revealed after the finale. It was the final episode, and it was in the credits. And they're going through the credits of the final episode, and they're like, Hera is voiced by this, Ezra is voiced by this person. And finally, for the first time ever, they say, Chopper, voiced by Dave Filoni.
Oh.
Yeah, and it was kind of funny, because in Rebels Recon, they have Chopper Cam, where they actually have, like, a metal real-life chopper, is the one they used in Rogue One, that just roams around the office and causes trouble for people in Rebels Recon. And so in Rebels Recon, Chopper's watching the episode, and that pops up as, like, Chopper, voiced by Dave Filoni. And, like, Chopper has, like, an existential crisis, and he's just, like, it's all these, like, pictures of Dave Filoni, like, floating around him, and he's just like, brr, 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 brr. And, like, he wakes up, and he's wearing Dave Filoni's hat. It's a hilarious bit that they did on Rebels Recon. But, yeah, they finally revealed in the final episode that Chopper was voiced by Dave Filoni. And Dave Filoni is such a fucking troll, because he's gotten that question for years, who voices Chopper? And he's just like, we just kind of make it up, and it's like a mechanical voice and stuff. And the whole time, it was fucking Dave Filoni the entire time. Oh, I'm so excited about this. I've been wanting to eat these. So, Chris hates American Kit Kat.
Cause I spit on the American Kit Kat.
Because he's dumb. I like your voice. And so our friend
dumb to Dario hate bad Kit Kat? No. He's smart to hate bad Kit Kat.
So our friend Dario Gonzalez, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, sends us candy from all over the world to review, and I've been waiting for this one. We have a honey tea Kit Kat from Japan.
I know
Japan.
We're back on the Kit Kat today. We've been like, it used to be all Kit Kats at first, and then we had to go into just the international chocolate market. But yeah, this is a classic.
And this is a honey tea Kit Kat. Sounds like a regular Kit Kat.
It looks a little dark chocolatey, and I broke
it
in half.
Oh my god! Oh my god! You can taste the tea in it. This tastes like my friend Cara's teas when she bakes cookies with her teas. Like, or like when my friend Allison bakes, instead of using water, she uses tea to make her baking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it has, like, it's like cookies with, like, a tea flavor underneath. Oh my god, and it has an aftertaste of, like, you can taste the honey in the aftertaste.
Yes, you can.
Oh my god.
And dark, dark chocolate. And it's like, it's very similar. If it wasn't for the honey flavor, it was very similar to the matcha teas.
Oh my god, Dario, this is so good.
It's like three flavors that hit you at different times.
The more you chew it, the more you taste like that tea flavor, the more you eat it. Oh my god, it's like so strongly tea. That's so good. Oh my, I've yet to be disappointed with a Kit Kat from Japan.
It should be Oreo flavored with the white cream in it, but it doesn't taste like it looks at all. It's,
oh my god. Between the cantaloupe Kit Kat, And the, like, this one and the green tea Kit Kat, man, Japan has yet to disappoint me with Kit Kats. This is fucking delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, god. I'm gonna make love to this Kit Kat. This is my boyfriend now, everybody.
That's the problem, though, with the Japanese Kit Kats is they're tiny. They're like two small size Kit Kats, you know?
Oh my god. I'm gonna marry this Kit Kat. I'm gonna eat it. Oh my god, I'm gonna sleep with it. Eat the hell out of it.
Well, I'm an ordained minister, so if you ever want to do the ceremony, you and the Kit Kat get your marriage license together and we'll do this thing.
I killed it. It's dead. I ate all of it.
That's okay. You have a little bit of a, we call that the praying mantis arrangement.
Wow.
There's more Kit Kats out there.
Oh, we finished the final Mandalore Satine Mall arc. So where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where I am the co-reigning king of Two True Freaks, along with Scott Gardner, the other one that one and one makes two.
And you know, it's funny, like, when I put in everyone's feedback and I copy and paste from Facebook, I usually has like all the links, like their pictures and like the show and respond links, because I just copy all of it and then paste it all. So I usually have to go back and delete all that. Recently, yours, whenever it says your Facebook name, it's like this person is an administrator and has these rights. And it's like just started recently doing that. So apparently, you being an admin adds that extra thing that I have to delete now every week.
Oh, sorry about that.
It's fine. It takes me 3 whole more seconds. It's fine.
And Two Freaks is where we hold all our podcasts, and you can go and subscribe there. You can subscribe from iTunes. And you can go to Facebook, where I am an admin on our Two True Freaks site, which is where we post all the podcasts when they come up, and you can talk about individual podcasts of all our shows. And there's the Two True Freaks Cantina, where we just have subcategories of, it's like an old forum. You can just go there and talk about whatever movie you just saw or want to see or hate or love or whatever, and or comic books, whatever. As long as it's nerd related, we like talking about it over there. And, of course, you can keep up with us if you do things on Twitter. You can go to Twitter, and there's a Two True Freaks on Twitter run by the legendary, the dancing machine, the podcasting machine. He's an all-around machine, basically, is what I'm trying to say. And since he is a machine, his name would be Gene the Machine, which would be his wrestling name. And that's Gene Hendricks.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-bum. I was like getting ready and I was like, this is good, just going on further and further. I'm like, literally, because I was gonna like tap it out like Gene, but then like it just kept going and I was like, when is it gonna stop?
He's lean and mean like a green bean. He's the son of Mr. Green Jeans.
I thought you were going to throw in a Rage Against the Machines at some point. Jeans, Rage Against the Machines.
Rage Against the Majine. Doesn't have a vagine. Gene, you're so mean. You have no vagine, Gene. I see you on the screen, Gene. You look mean and obscene, Gene. All right, man. My caffeine is starting to backfire. But okay. Yeah, that's where can people find you, Hope?
You can find me on Twitter at Jacob and Jedi. I run our Twitter account, and you can also find me at Hope Molinax. I also am writing a Thrawn fanfiction on Archive of Our Own, aka AO3. My name on there is Chaos Lydia, and the name of my fanfiction is Forces of Gravity. Have I actually read the summary of my fanfiction at any time?
No, not yet.
Can I read it, the summary of my fanfiction?
Yes!
Okay, so the summary. Cast Keanu Nudirodo has released a controversial book in the time of the New Republic. It outlines the lives of his parents, their meeting, and their secret relationship, and his father's death at Lothal. It caused quite a stir because his father was Grand Admiral Thrawn. And so the way it's my fiction is set up, the first half of each chapter is from Cass's point of view, and it's excerpts from his book. And then the second half of the chapter is actually how his parents got together and, like, going through all that. So, yeah, that's what my fan fiction is about and stuff. So,
it's a Thrawn version of How I Met Your Mother?
Yeah, I guess so. Never thought of it.
I've never seen How I Met Your Mother, so I don't
know.
Me
neither, so I assume. I've never seen it. But yeah, so it's fun. I've been really enjoying it. We recorded 2 episodes tonight, so I'm still about to put up chapter 9 because we did 2 episodes tonight and nothing changed since last week because I have not written in the time that we've been recording. So.
Yeah, no matter how talented Hope is, she cannot podcast and write Thrawn fan fiction at the same time.
I can try.
You could try, but yeah, it would just take away from both. So,
well, that's all I have. Oh my gosh, guess what we're doing next week?
I have no idea what's coming up next.
We are starting, I'm going to double check this before I say the wrong thing. We are starting the final arc of season 5.
I was
going
to say, there can only be one or two. We're like in like episode like 19?
16.
16?
Remember, this is a shorter season. There's only 20 episodes instead of 22 episodes. So we are about to start the final arc of season 5 of Clone Wars.
Well, I should imagine it should be pretty dramatic.
It is.
Good.
It's gonna. There's shit that goes down, and it's great, and I'm very excited about it. So we are almost done with season 5.
I'm liking how season 5 is winding up after those last 2 arcs.
Yeah. Anyway,
so I'm really looking forward to this.
I mean, there were definitely some good things in the kids' arc and stuff, like, here and there, because, like, Hondo was just fucking fun and Grievous, but that droid arc, man, is such a wah-wah.
Yep.
So, yeah. All right, guys, until next time, Satine's dead.
Well, be back with more drums.
Drama, we're gonna come back with a drama llama. Don't let it spit on you.
Drama llama ding dong.
Mm-hmm. Out of gym with Gene Gene, the Rage Against the Machine.
Gene Gene, the washing machine. If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at 2TrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, 2TrueFreaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the 2TrueFreaks at the same time.
Visit our website at 2TrueFreaks.com. 2TrueFreaks is always spelled T-W-O. T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S.
You can email 2TrueFreaks directly at 2TrueFreaks@gmail.com.
2TrueFreaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search 2TrueFreaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find 2TrueFreaks on Facebook. Just search for 2TrueFreaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about 2TrueFreaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."